Hello, welcome to another interview on givingcirclesHelp.com. This is Sharon Lipinski, and we're collecting information and interviews from people around the country who are running Giving Circles, and our goal is to learn from each other and continuously improve our ability to make an impact with our giving. Today, I'm speaking with Krista Scully. She is the co-creator of the Alaska Women's Giving Circle, which was founded in 2007. Krista, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. I appreciate the invitation.
Could you start by telling us a little bit about your giving circle and your mission?
Yes, absolutely. So our giving circle started in 2007, and we realized that there were many of us who were devoted to giving philanthropically in our community, but feeling like our financial gifts weren't going as far as they could. So we decided to start something that was twofold. One, to be more strategic and intentional about giving, and also to help people realize what kinds of areas they really felt passionate about in giving.
So you have a twofold focus, to be strategic. And I'm sorry, what was the other?
And for people to discover what their giving passions are.
Okay. So how do you go about meeting those two needs within your giving circle?
Well, we were pretty organic about it because we weren't really quite sure where we wanted to start. So what we decided to do was entertain funding proposals from members of our group because we thought that there would be opportunity for people with different organizations and projects that wouldn't ordinarily cross their paths. So people who weren't familiar with arts funding would get to hear about people who were interested in hearing about and sharing about social service agency funding opportunities, could then learn about that. Mm-hmm. So we were really leaning on the strengths and talents and involvement of the group. People sort of figure out where they were compelled to give.
And that was, you started that 4 years ago. So how have your experience been over the 4 years? Have you changed at all in how you're meeting those needs?
Yeah, I think with any group, you have to figure out how to change as either the group size changes or the economy changes or other kinds of details. So our first year, like I said, we entertained funding proposals from within the group. The second year, we opened it up to proposals from the Alaska Community Foundation, which is where our fund is housed. And then the third year, which was this past year, we had a smaller pool of members of the Giving Circle, so we didn't have as much money to play around with. So we went back to a few proposals that we had seen once before and ended up going with two proposals that were suggested by members of our group.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the Alaska Foundation. Did you start out having a relationship with a foundation, or is that something that you added later?
The Alaska Community Foundation was definitely part of the conversation when we very first started. We appreciated that they would manage the money for us. It could be done electronically, so members could simply go online and give. And other people could donate if they wanted to. So it was definitely a plus for us to have them as a resource.
Do they have a minimum dollar requirement that you need to store with them?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Maybe. I don't know that detail. Whatever it was, we met it. Members of our group buy in at $500 a year.
Okay.
We then pool that money and make grants back out, but generally keep a couple of thousand in the fund for any projects that might come up during the year outside of our normal giving cycle. Because part of what we really wanted to do was we wanted to be sort of mavericks in the sense that there are so many worthy projects out there, and unless they were attached to a nonprofit or a pretty steady funding stream, they weren't able to get money. And we wanted to be able to do things that were unique and innovative. So we made sure that we had enough funds in order to meet the needs throughout the year.
Can you give me an example of something that you think was mavericky that you guys were able to fund?
Yeah, one of our very first projects, so that was a project housed in the Alaska court system. We had learned from members who sat on the Anchorage Women's Commission and contacts that we had with the Women's Resource Center that there were more times than not women who were victims of domestic violence that came to court to fill out protective orders. They would have kids in tow. Sometimes they had fled their homes with just the clothes on their backs. They hadn't eaten. Kids had dirty diapers. And when you're already in crisis and you have no money, it's really hard to make intelligent and safe decisions about your life. And so we thought about ways that we might be able to help and met with nutritionists from the city to develop a list of high-protein, non-perishable foods that could be bought and kept with the legal advocate at the courthouse who could, at her discretion, food, diapers, et cetera, to people who came and needed assistance at the DV office.
And did you fund it? Is this an ongoing thing that you fund? Was it a one-time thing?
It was a one-time thing, but my understanding is that they've since gone on to fund other kinds of ways to support it. So I know that they've got diapers in hand and other items that are really useful to people who are coming into the office.
So you kind of gave it a jump start.
Yes.
That's really neat. Now, did that go through your traditional grant process? Did you all review it and talk about it?
Well, nothing felt traditional at the beginning. in fact, it was really exciting. None of us really knew quite what to expect. We all came from different backgrounds, some from very strong philanthropy, planned giving backgrounds. Some were office managers. Some work in the social service field. We were all over the place. And so we just made an agreement to work together until it felt right. So as a group, we looked at all of the proposals. What was really fun was we invited people the first year to provide us with no more than one sheet of paper. And we didn't care what they did on that sheet of paper. They could have drawn a vision. They could have sang us a song. They could have wrote something very traditional about how they wanted to fund a project. But we really wanted to see the heart and why it was important to them. So I don't know that anyone would call that traditional.
No. No, but I think it's a great example of how when you're starting out, it's important to just start. Has your process changed over the 3 years?
Yeah, a little bit, simply because we needed to put some arms around it. So we have a timeline that we work on. People can give at any point during the calendar year, but they're giving the amount is due by the end of the calendar year, so December 31st. We then meet, when do we do that? So then we meet over the summer at some point, and that's really more of a social get-together. And then we meet again in the fall to start looking at proposals, and we like to make funding announcements at a traditional giving time, so we usually try to do that around Thanksgiving, Christmas time frame, so people know what to expect in the coming year.
And then the people that you are choosing to give money to, they will get it the following year, or do they get it when you award it?
Yeah, it depends on because we work with the Community Foundation, our funding selections have to go before their board for final approval. So it sort of depends on where they're at in their meeting cycle.
Okay. So are they reviewing it to make sure that it meets like certain qualifications that they have?
Right, that it has.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that it is attached to a nonprofit in some way, so it may not be. So, for instance, one of the projects that we funded for 2011 is a new chapter of Girls on the Run, which is an organization that works with young girls in grade school on self-esteem issues, and it's coupled with physical fitness through running. And it culminates in a group training run race at the end of their season. So in other states, this is often partnered with, say, a local women's shelter or another like-minded women's organization. And the Anchorage chapter decided to partner with our local running club that's a nonprofit. So we awarded the funds to that nonprofit, who then turned around and gave it to Girls on the Run.
Okay, interesting. Krista, could you talk a little bit about your membership and maybe how, where you've started, how it's grown, and some of the ways that you have found it effective to recruit new members?
Mm-hmm. So we started out with who we knew. Talisa Northcutt and I, and I really need to give credit to Talisa. This was very much her brainchild, and she and I met as members of Leadership Anchorage, which is a boot camp for community leaders, and it was one of the very last things she talked about in Leadership Anchorage, and that it was something she wanted to explore, and she wanted a partner in it, and I said, pick me. I'm in with both feet. She is just really brilliant and kind in her thinking. So Talisa and I got together and made an invitation list of people that we thought might be interested in. And so we just started holding kind of some informational gatherings. We didn't have any legs under it. We just wanted to talk to people about, this is what we're thinking about doing. Is this something you would be interested in? And if so, how much would you want to give? Because we wanted to also push people's giving capacity. So if you're committed to giving $300 a year, what would it look like to give $500 a year, et cetera? Mm-hmm. So we sort of gained traction. We were talking with our friends, who in turn were talking with their friends. And I think at our very first official meeting, there were about 50 people, 50 women there.
That's huge. That's a huge group to start
out
with.
Yeah. It was really huge. And as you know, when you get a group of women together, there's always really great food and great conversation. But what we found is that the attendees felt like they were in great company. Mm-hmm. Women were meeting women that inspired them, made them excited about financial giving, made them excited about what was happening in their community. So it had a ripple effect that we hadn't intended, but we're thrilled about.
So you started out with 50 members at your first meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And did you find that most of those women were already on board and ready to donate $500 a year?
Yeah, I think so. Economically, we were also at a better place as well. Mm-hmm. So it didn't feel quite as tight for people to give $500. So I want to say that first year, we probably had about 35 who actually gave.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of people who said, you know, I want to wait till the first funding cycle, kind of see what it looks like. And then we stayed steady the second year, and then it started to drop off after the second year. Just, you know, we're in an age range where our peers are having babies, mm-hmm. or they're sending their kids off to school, or just various life changes, and we needed to be flexible and understanding about that.
Mm-hmm.
So once somebody committed to the year, they gave their $500, and if they weren't able to come the next year, that was okay too.
Mm-hmm. Now, can they give that $500 at, spread it out over months, or is it
Mm-hmm.
just a, okay, so whatever works for them, they can kind of break it up?
Yep, absolutely.
Since you, so you've started out with more members, you've kind of gone down a little bit. Are you, what are you doing to recruit new members? Are you finding there's anything that's effective? Do you do it actively, or is it just...
Thank you for asking that. I sort of went sideways when you asked me that initially. We really haven't focused a lot on recruitment as of late. We've stuck with our current members, but we added in the second year a service piece to giving because what we found was the group of women we were working with, not only did they really care about the organizations that we were giving to, but they were really starting to care about each other. And so we wanted to merge those ideas. So the second year we used as a recruitment tool and as an activity for our current members, we provided some direct service to Beans Cafe, which is our local food shelter, and we got together and made what's called beanie boxes. And so they're shoe boxes that you fill full of shampoo and soap and toothpaste and playing cards and gloves, things that you need to survive in the winter in Alaska. And so our members were invited to ask their friends if they wanted to come. This year, we're also doing a recruitment event we gave to Habitat for Humanity's 100 Women Build House. And so we'll have a work crew at the end of September on the job site working on the 100 Women Build House that we donated to.
That's neat. That's neat to bring in the service component in addition to the money. What has been your biggest challenge so far as you've been running this giving circle?
That's a really great question. I guess we really struggled initially with how much time do we all want to be together? Because every one of us was incredibly busy. We didn't want to add more meetings to an already full schedule unless they had a purpose. So we struggled with how much time to spend together and who do we really want to be when we grow up? In terms of what will this group look like? And so we decided to let leadership emerge within the group. So Talisa and I are there as organizers. We're the contacts for the Alaska Community Foundation. But if members wanted to host gatherings, they were more than welcome to do that because we realized we couldn't be the leaders in every aspect. And there was such amazing talent in our group, we knew just to get out of the way in some instances. So that, meeting frequency and discussions about what we were going to look like. And you know what? Not overcomplicating things. I think a lot of times organizations are started and everybody wants to put it in the same sort of formulaic box. So you have to fill out this form at this time and do this and steps A, B, and C. And we realized we needed more freedom. And for me, who's a person that doesn't particularly like rules, that was really refreshing for me, that we could let go of really rigid organizational planning.
And that's worked for the group and the type of people who are in your group. They're also appreciating that environment.
Yeah, I think that there's a mix. I'm sure that there are people who would very much like to have it be a lot more formalized. And then there are people who are fine just going with the flow. So we try to meet in the middle.
It's always a challenge to balance those needs.
Sure, it's like any group. You know,
Mm-hmm.
every group goes through its life stages. And so we're in the, let's see, what is it? Forming, norming, storming. We're in the performing stage.
So some of your advice then would be keep it simple, go with the flow, and accommodate the reality of busy lives.
Yeah, and make it personal.
Do you mean
Be
by that?
connect. Pardon me?
What do you mean? Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, make connections with the organizations that you're funding. Don't just be a check. Find a way to connect with them. Have a meeting where you share dinner with their case manager who can tell you stories about how that money's being spent. Or attend a board meeting or do a service project. Find a way that you meaningfully contribute that's not just about money.
Why is that important?
Well, I think it's important because for me, financial, I give the things that move me. The things that are important. And if I'm only writing checks and I really don't know what's going on in an organization, I feel less compelled to give. And we wanted to build sustainable funding and community partnerships. So you don't do that unless you get into a room together.
So for you, part of the impact is not just the amount of dollars, but it's actually hearing from people the emotional impact it's made on their lives.
Absolutely. For example, one of the projects we funded was the Mary Magdalene House, and that is a nonprofit that supports women who are leaving the life of prostitution. And we heard a couple of things. One was transportation was an issue. And so we were able to provide money that women purchase bikes. And so we heard stories about how women were discovering the joy and freedom of riding a bike for the first time and not being dependent on anyone else to get them to where they needed to go. We wouldn't have known that
Right,
if
I
we'd just written a
wouldn't
check.
have.
No.
The interesting project too. I wouldn't have thought of transportation in that way, so that's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, we're approaching towards the end of our time here, Krista, and I wanted to check with you. Is there anything that you think is special or unique that you would like to share with us about your giving circle that we didn't already cover?
Boy, I appreciate that invitation. I feel like I've covered it. I think what's really extraordinary but not unusual is that when women come together, they can do really great things. And it's been an honor, and I think I can speak for Talisa also. It was an honor for us to be part of this process. And we're delighted to be able to share it with others.
Yeah, I talk to so many people who find that the giving circles are such a rewarding part of their lives and that we all want to give, but like you were saying, it's like, how much can I give alone and I'm
Yeah.
not as connected to it. And so, what you've been able to do is bring in other people, give more, and then really connect it with the emotion as far as why does it matter? What difference is it making to people? And that's profoundly rewarding.
Yeah, I agree. And how lucky for you that you get to work in a world where you hear all those stories.
Oh, there are so many interesting stories.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Krista, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, your advice, and some information about your giving circle. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.